Over Thompson is good. Timeout, Cleveland. What a start for the Boston Celtics here at home. It's 25-9.
The great Adam Amin on the call yesterday, and a beatdown is what we watched yesterday in Boston. The Celtics roll yesterday against the Cleveland Cavaliers. That game was never even close. I'm in studio today, Mark Rogers with us soon. The missile across the glass. Missile, I was hoping for some highly competitive playoff basketball yesterday, and we got a blowout. That was terrible.
No competitive games, Dusty. That's just... I mean, Boston just lit them up from the get-go. You know, you see those starts in the NBA all the time. The 25-9 leads, or someone gets up like 20-5 or something.
The other team, and then it comes back. Yeah. It evens out.
It evaporates quickly.
Never evaporated. A little bit in the third quarter. Cleveland made a little bit of a run in the third. But, man, it was all Boston in the fourth quarter. 108-83, 25-point victory for the Celtics as they remain undefeated. They're in Boston in this postseason, and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, I'm not ready to change my pick, though. I mean, I got to give Boston. It's like everybody's been, nobody's believed in Boston all playoffs. The only series I had them winning was against Milwaukee, and they were able to win that in seven. I thought they'd lose in five against Philly. They won in five, and I had this one going six, but clearly Boston makes a huge statement in game number one. I thought LeBron was terrible. His body language was bad. The energy didn't seem to be there for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I expect them to be much better in game number two, but I don't want to say it's, again, I'm not ready to change my pick, but that was, I guess, somewhat alarming. It's only one game, and I know playoffs, you can't look too much into one game, but how they could show up after all the rest that they were so excited to get when they swept the Toronto Raptors, for them to show up like that with just a lack of energy, careless with the basketball, especially LeBron James. He had seven turnovers yesterday. It was a negative 32 in the plus-minus. I give a ton of credit to the Boston Celtics. Al Horford, he's been great this postseason. I thought Marcus Morris was fantastic on LeBron yesterday, and he was knocking down shots. Jaylen Brown looks healthy again. They're rolling, man. I don't know what else to say, but Boston was extremely impressive yesterday. But LeBron James says, don't be too concerned.
I didn't go to college, so it's not March Madness. You know, you get better throughout the series. You see ways you can get better throughout the series, but I've been down 0-1, I've been down 0-2. I've been down before in the postseason. But for me, there's never no level of concern, no matter how bad I played tonight with seven turnovers, how inefficient I was shooting the ball, just as confident going into a series, no matter if it's a 0-0 series or I'm down 0-1.
I don't know what's going on with LeBron's voice, but he sounds like he's a robot from another planet there.
Maybe that was just, he was so drained after the game.
He basically just says, I will surmise it for you. He didn't go to college. He's only been in the NBA. This isn't March Madness. Don't be too concerned about one game. Basically, he's not worried about this series, and they're just fine. And that's more than likely the right approach to have. But, man, when you watched that game yesterday, that you had to have raised your eyebrows and say, man, is this Boston Celtics team too much for LeBron James and company? At least in game one, that was definitely the case. I will still back the Cavs, though yesterday was not a good look whatsoever for LeBron or for Cleveland. The other big sporting event that I was paying attention to over the weekend was the Players' Championship. And congrats to Webb Simpson, as he wins what some people will dub the fifth major championship. And this is what it sounded like for his final putt. It wasn't a stressful event, but all in all, this putt was the conclusion of this tournament and what led Webb Simpson to win $1.98 million.
Already a major champion, Webb Simpson can add the title Players' Champion to the resume. What a performance at the Stadium Course this week.
Big payday for Webb Simpson. What's crazy is he wins the 2012 U.S. Open, and this is only his second victory since that win at the U.S. Open. But it's obviously a big one. As I mentioned, a lot of people say it's the fifth major, if you want to go that route. But 49 of the top 50 players in the world were on the course. And one of those players was Tiger Woods. Now, here's the deal with Tiger. He barely makes it into the tournament. Or he barely makes the cut. He's right at the cut line. We're following it Friday. He might be in. He might be out. It's back and forth. Well, he makes the cut. And I'll tell you what, I was all in on Tiger on Saturday morning. Mister, were you watching Tiger Saturday morning?
I started watching Tiger Sunday.
So you didn't watch him at all Saturday?
No.
Man, so he shoots a 30 on the front nine Saturday. He's 6-under. He gets it to 8-under through 12, Missile. I mean, he was on pace to have the tournament best round. I mean, he was right there. Then he has a bogey, and he winds up shooting a 65. But, I mean, he was so dialed in those first 12 holes, and it looked like we could see potentially history there at the Players. He fires a 65, and even yesterday, he had it going a little bit too, Missile. He had an opportunity after Webb Simpson bogeyed a hole. Tiger could have – he had a birdie putt. If he makes it, he would be down three. He missed the birdie, and it never got closer than four shots. But there was a time where he was tied for second, and this is what that birdie sounded like.
Inside 5 feet to go to 14 under par.
One under would be ideal. Woods could make two birdies.
And with that birdie there, Tiger Woods moves into a tie for second, just five shots behind Webb Simpson, and we're not even close to being done.
The Tiger was roaring. Then he quickly bogeys a hole, and unfortunately, he goes to the island hole, the dreaded 17.
Tiger here going with the big sand wedge.
Really?
Yeah, he went from roaring to meowing the final few holes. All in all, I think you got to be happy with Tiger. Now, I guess it begs a question. Why did he play so much better when there was no pressure, Missile? Like, I mean, you can't tell me that some of this isn't have to do with pressure. When the dude is, you know, when he started this tournament and, you know, I think he probably put a lot on himself. He was, you know, really pushing. He was hitting all over the place. When he kind of realized Webb Simpson had such a lead, he could just go out there and play, not think about anything. Well, he was dialed in, and he was one of the better golfers over the weekend. So can he put it all together? I would love to see it, but if he can be that guy he was on the weekend, it should be a very fun year to watch Tiger Woods. But I have to think some, you know, mentally, he's a different golfer when he's applying pressure on himself compared to when he's going out there and just swinging.
Yeah, he's got to just, it's like you're just kind of getting to, is he's just got to stop stinking it up on Thursday, Friday.
That would help. Barely making cuts is not where you want to be.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about how he's playing lights out. Well, I mean, on Saturday? Well, it's all meaningless because he's so far behind because he didn't do well enough because he barely made the cut on Thursday, Friday.
And Webb Simpson was ridiculously, I mean, in front of everybody, it was just crazy. I mean, nobody really ever even challenged Webb Simpson anywhere through the weekend. And that's a credit to him because he was obviously fantastic over the weekend. Missile, I think I chapped a couple of Thunder fans. I've been called the Mavericks homer already today, questioning what I know, and I'm just throwing stuff out. Talking about James Harden, that people, boy, Don't you try to tell a Thunder fan that James Harden might have wanted to stay in Oklahoma City. They refuse to listen to it. I mean, I've heard it out of his own mouth. I mean, I was watching these. I told you about it. We've talked about it. But, I mean, listen, I wasn't sitting there. I don't know exactly how everything went down. But I did have a very good friend that worked in the Oklahoma City Thunder organization. Doesn't work there anymore. I was with him the next night after the trade went down. He's at my house, and we talked through the entire thing. And I just think it's interesting. Like, I was reading Nick Collison's piece with Royce. Did you happen to see what Nick said about James Harden?
I saw that.
He
I
called
know.
It a, quote, gut punch, Missile, from Nick, Mr. Thunder. Talked about how upset he was and the gut punch that it was. None of those guys saw it coming. I don't think James Harden saw it coming. Again, as the story goes from what I was told, this is from what I was told back in 2012, to what I watched James Harden on E60, it was the exact same story. That an offer was made, with $56 million, Okay, or 54. I think it was six under the max. Was the max 60, I think, at the time?
It was something like that. It wasn't a lot under, but it was under.
It was $6 million under the max. And he had an hour to make a decision. Basically, the deal was already done with Houston. He either inks it or they're going to deal him. Okay? Well, James Harden basically said, well, I'm not going to agree to that because his people in negotiations, they want to try to get up to the $60 million number. Not thinking that there was already a deal in place with Houston, but Sam Presti already had a deal in place. So when he said no, it wasn't like there was any more dialogue. It was like, bam, you're out, bud. So, I mean, I don't think that's really shining any light on anything. I don't know why everybody seems to refuse to believe that James Harden might have continued to come off the bench or would have wanted to stay with that nucleus. I mean, he only played 3 years in Oklahoma City, and he had an opportunity to play with one of the best scorers you've ever seen, one of the best athletes on the planet. I mean, like James Harden said in the piece that I saw, they had big plans. And it's basically the same thing Nick Collison said in the piece with Royce, is it not?
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. You know, I 100% believe you. But think about everything else. We've never heard anyone say Harden demanded a trade.
Never.
We have heard that Harden wanted a max.
Right.
So, I mean, makes sense that he was traded. And this kind of fits Presti's personality for me that he would, especially back in 2012, that he would say, you're either doing it this way or you're out of here. And also, this makes me wonder, were the owners actually trying to avoid the tax?
I don't know.
Was it Presti? I don't know necessarily that the owners... I mean, that makes me think that maybe the owners didn't mind paying the tax at that time.
I have no idea. I just, you know, and I'm not trying to rehash old things, though. Two of those guys on that team will be facing off in the Western Conference Finals, so, I mean, I think it's very pertinent. And I think it's a huge piece in Thunder history, in the history of the NBA. I mean, again, there's going to be a 30 for 30 on it, whether you like it or not. I think it's very interesting. And I guess for Thunder fans, it's easier just to make James Harden out to be the bad guy. Is that kind of the thought that he forced his way out, that he demanded to leave? Your GM made a mistake?
Yeah.
I mean, is that the easier route? Is that why I'm now a Mavs homer? And I don't know. I just find it interesting. I mean, that trade, as we look at the Western Conference now, has massive, and I mean massive, implications. Who knows what would happen afterwards? And, like, I guess my biggest thing is, as you look back at that, I wonder what the rush was. Because you had another year on his rookie deal. That was his final deal. But you have the ability to match whatever anyone else wanted to offer, right? They had his rights for a minimum of 4 more years.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that Harden could get the 5-year max. He had until October 31st of that year. Remember, that's the only thing I can think of why they set a hard deadline. But even then, he would still have a 4-year max he could get to in the offseason. A team would still be able to match if they waited till midseason to trade him.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's all past history, and I'm sure no one wants to revisit that. E60 was on last night, and I was watching James Harden, and I'll tell you what. People can say that he was placating to the cameras, and that was all fake. I thought it was authentic. Maybe I'm crazy. I mean, he basically said that he wanted to be in Oklahoma City. He wanted to stay here. I don't know why, if you're now a member of the Houston Rockets, if that's not how you truly felt, why you would go back and lie about it. Like, I guess I don't understand that point or that angle. Like, what does he have to gain by coming back saying, well, I really wanted to be in Oklahoma City? I just think the guy was being honest. That's kind of the way I took it. And again, based off Mr. Thunder, El Capitan Nick Collison, when I read his comments the other day, it seemed like to the team, as he said, gut punch. Sounded like the same gut punch that I heard James Harden describing yesterday on E60. It is an AutoMax Monday. We'll be with Mark Rogers at AutoMax. I believe he's in Del City today when we get back. Other news that I want to get to, Kyler Murray, Missile. He had quite a weekend on the diamond. What's that mean? We'll discuss next.
What I enjoyed listening to today on the way to the show.
Hello, Marcus.
We had a little bit of technical snafu that we'll work out here. Man, so you believe that just because the Western Conference Finals involves James Harden and Kevin Durant that you're going to rip that scab off for the Thunder fans today? Ouch!
I wasn't trying to rip any scab off. I mean, it's the history. I mean, it's been, what, 6 years now? I just basically said 5 years. I basically just said that I had seen, and I saw it last year too, but the E60 they ran yesterday with James Harden, I found it very interesting. I was sitting on my couch. I was watching. It's interesting to hear from James Harden's mom, the way that they described the relationship in Oklahoma City, and how James Harden talked about how things went down and what it was like. And I mean, I think it, I mean, on the front page of today's paper, it says hard to watch.
Everybody wants to rip the scab off.
It's buried. I mean, you can't just bury your head in the sand and not realize that two guys that you drafted, one's going to win an MVP, the other was a finals MVP last year, were here and are no longer here, and you have to kind of, you know, you have to kind of look at what was the first piece that left and why.
The only thing you left out of that is that that Harden's a better player than Russell right now.
He is. I know.
And that's crazy. The thing to make it worse. Russell's that's a low cherry man on top of the Sunday.
Russell's low man on the totem pole right now. Based off those three.
Now, that was an interesting discussion that you were having with and then the last segment with Josh too. Is that I think that one day it'll all come out. I think that clearly there was a power play going on between Harden's agent, who it was. Wasn't it Pelinka at the time? Was it Rob Pelinka?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it was Rob Pelinka or not.
Harden's agent was at the time was that we're not signing for less than the max. And Bill Simmons has written a lot about this. The $6 million gap between the max and what the offer was to him.
Correct.
Seems very trivial at this point. And again, I think that nobody's going to want to take blame for that now, whether it be the ownership or Sam Presti, who decided he wasn't the max player. But going back to the time, the one thing that makes it much worse now is that we have hindsight. At the time, nobody knew that James Harden was going to be as good as he is right now. Nobody probably even could have foreseen that. I mean, he was a really good player, but he just kind of not played very well in the finals. All of that not reason not to want to go forward with him.
If you remember, though, he was also a key piece in beating San Antonio that playoffs,
I believe. Absolutely
was.
He won one series and then didn't perform well in another. I'm not trying to minimize what he was then. I think he was great, and they should have probably maxed him out, gone ahead and done it. But I think that anybody would have said at the time he's the third of the three options if you want to keep guys long term. He would have been the guy number three because there wasn't even a debate one day.
Surge in him, right?
Surge or
That's
James.
Right.
It was never James or Russell
Correct.
Or James or Kevin. It was always Surge or James because those guys came up in the same summer. But anyway, that's interesting stuff.
I'm not trying to rehash it too much, and I'm
just grieving you. I'm just kidding.
I guess my thing is, though, like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I can kind of see why Thunder fans want to make it seem like James Harden is just he wanted the star limelight all to himself. He wanted all the money he could possibly make. First of all, who doesn't want money? I mean, I understand that he wanted the max, but, well, he would have never played here because he wanted to be a star, and he couldn't have been a star under Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. Obviously, we're seeing Golden State. You can't have multiple stars and be able to work it out. And it seemed like for a short period of time, we only got to see it work for 3 years. And in those 3 years, we saw it blossom into, I think, a Western Conference Finals and then an NBA Finals. So who knows where it goes from there. But I think it's just easier for Thunder fans to say, well, this is all on James Harden. And since he's the one that's gone now, we can just put it on him. I would just remind people, players, they don't always, they're not the ones that initiate trades. And at least as it relates to this case, I mean,
I never remember him
being like Kyrie Irving and taking it to the headlines and screaming from the mountaintops that he wanted out. I don't remember that at all.
You can't blame him for initiating the trade. That goes on Sam Presti. I'm at AutoMax Hyundai in Norman, your number one Hyundai volume dealer. Over 500 new Hyundais in stock, where you can come check out the all-new Kona starting at $19,500. They have over 40 of those. The new Tucson starting at $19,999. Over 70 of those in stock. And we are located here on Interstate 35, a little bit east of I-35 between Robinson and Main in Norman on an AutoMax Monday, AutoMax Hyundai Monday. I had a busy morning, man. I went to check out a little bit of the NCAA Golf Regional at Jimmy Austin. The OU right now is in first as a team. Top five go on to Karsten for the NCAA championship. Course looks good. It's in incredible shape. And then I spent the rest of the morning on the phone with all kinds of different people discussing what the ramifications are for the Supreme Court decision today to legalize sports wagering. So, and then we got all this stuff that happened over the weekend. So I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more in the show about what's going to go on with sports wagering. But,
what did you think about that, by the way?
I think that everybody in the industry was just waiting for the ruling to come down, but most people didn't think that the Supreme Court was going to overturn it. Maybe because the state of New Jersey had been winning and its appeal all the way up. I think it's good. It's going to be fun. It'll be fun to see what happens, and it should be. I've never been one to worry. I don't think you worry about, well, if you legalize sports gambling, you're going to bring all kinds of corruption and graft and things like that into play. I think that's an old way of thinking.
I agree.
I want to talk a little bit about the weekend
down,
sports.
That beatdown yesterday?
Wow. I don't think – no one should be on this bandwagon right now that this series is over. But it does tell you that this is a different type of challenge for Cleveland than what they faced in the last two series.
Well, yes. The Boston Celtics, they're a much smarter, more disciplined basketball team than the Toronto Raptors. And they play defense, Marcus. They contest, and they make it difficult on everybody. Kind of like you said they would. I mean, you had said this is going to be different for LeBron. Toronto, they didn't offer much resistance. Boston's going to have a plan, and they did have a plan. And their guys stepped up and played extremely well.
They were really good. 15 points for LeBron?
He was awful. He didn't even look like himself, Mark. I mean, he just – I don't even know. This is weird. Kind of reminded me of 2011 versus my Mavericks LeBron, like just disengaged. He just wasn't very engaged in the game at all.
They need one of two in this. You know, it's extremely important that they get one of two.
Yeah.
Like, if they go down 0-2, I think that this is –
it'll be tough.
This looks like it's going to be Boston series. If it's even at one, then really you can – say this never even happened. It's not that big of a deal. Same thing happened to them in the Pacers series when they got crushed. And that's how smart LeBron is. I think they made a little bit of a push at the end of the third quarter to try to get back in it, and the deficit was just too big. But wow, Boston, their ability to trust each other out there on offense and defense is hard to quantify based in a game that's based on superstars, because they can really defend as a team. And they get good shots on offense. So, Cleveland, man, they got to have some guys hit some shots. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if you're going to guard LeBron like that, there's going to be plenty of open and wide open opportunities for a lot of people. And they weren't hitting them yesterday.
If you're Boston, I mean, by the way, I'll say I was wrong. I'd been pretty critical on Danny Ainge because he was just hoarding those picks. And I felt like they should have made a move to bring in, like, I remember I really thought they should go get Jimmy Butler last year. And they didn't. They waited. And obviously,
yeah,
that's why Danny Ainge – you and I were both on Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge smarter than us, Mark, because he's drafted extremely well. He's now got superstar power, both young and veteran. And he's got, you know, probably a top three coach in the NBA. And, I mean, it just seems like right now the Boston Celtics, they've just got so many pieces that they – I'm going to be surprised if they're not real players – to try to bring in even more talent this offseason with just the abundance of riches that Danny Ainge has at his disposal.
Some of the pieces that they have, too, are like, really? Marcus Morris?
Yeah. How's that dude getting it done like that? I mean, he's playing defense on LeBron. He outplayed LeBron James yesterday, Mark.
I'm a competitor. You know, he's the best player, and, you know, I'm going to be able to tell my kids this one day. So, you know, it's exciting. I love the challenge, but like I said, man, it's a team effort.
Marcus Morris, man, he had 21 and 10, 7 of 12 from the field, and a very resourceful 3 of 4 from behind the arc. So there's one guy. How about Aaron Baines? I mean, again, is that a piece? I mean, like, how did they put this team together? And some of these are issues that Oklahoma City has, right, is that you got to be able to find some guys that can contribute in ways like that. But It's very interesting how this team is put together, but just how well they play together. And the Cavs' biggest problem, Dusty, I think yesterday, I mean, it was twofold. One was that the defense looked like regular season Cavs.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to tell themselves, hey, look, we were We shot 4 for 26 from behind the 3-point line. That's going to be better most of the time in this series. That's the outlier. They're not going to shoot 4 for 26 again the rest of the playoffs. So better defense will keep them in the game and keep them closer. And we've got to hope that we facilitate a little bit more offense. And LeBron has to realize too. And I think that, you know, that some other guys are going to have to hit some shots. LeBron's smart enough to know that somebody I was watching said that what's going to take for the Cavs, and it's like LeBron's going to have to score 40 or 45. I think that would be panic. That would be the panic move. And I don't think LeBron's going to do it that way. I think that he's going to continue to try to get teammates involved and play basketball the right way. We'll see after game two. It might be time to press the panic button.
I do think though, if you go back to that Pacers series, remember they lose game one at home, and it really wasn't even that close. Pacers kind of dominated them, not in this fashion, but it was still dominant. The next game, LeBron comes out. What did he score? Like the first 16 points, something crazy like that.
Yes,
I would say that. I don't think he needs to go for 40 something, but I do think that the energy level, the aggressiveness, needs to be different from Jump Street, because I feel like the Cavs, I mean, he's the measuring stick. He's the guy. He's the catalyst. I think that they are going to go as LeBron goes to a degree, and I don't mean just him scoring the ball, but just his overall mindset, his energy. Is he aggressive? And he was none of those last night. I would look for him to be that to start game two tomorrow night.
That'll be fun to watch. Well, we have Western Conference Game 1 tonight, and that's must-see TV. There's no question about that. All right, when we come back, we'll get into what this means for the ruling today by the Supreme Court, what that means for when you can actually place a bet in the state of Oklahoma on a sporting event. Stay tuned, the Monsters. A lot of negotiation between the tribes in the state and the state of the state. Dusty, what's happening, man? This is certainly a big change in the way that we look at sports wagering.
Here's my big thing, and there's going to be a lot smarter people who are more dialed in to be able to work out the intricacies of how it's going to work. You know, where the money's going to go, and just all what exactly does it look like? Do you have to show up an establishment? You know, I thought we had Todd Furman on last hour. He gave some great insight, but even he doesn't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see exactly what all happens with this. My big thing is this. So basically, the federal government's going to say, all right, 50 states, you police yourselves. You want to have gambling? It's going to be a state-by-state run thing. Okay, that's great. My thing is, whatever money this generates, it's generating money because it's the Oklahoma people or whatever state's people losing their money. I mean, they're gambling and they're losing. That's where this money is generated. So my big thing is, and by the way, that's fine. We're all grown-ups. People that make money are grown-ups. They should be able to gamble away their money if they want or do whatever they want with it. They earn that money. I agree that there should be legalized gambling. I also just hope, though, Mark, that if that money's coming out of the pockets of taxpayers and Oklahomans as it relates to this state, I hope that that money gets put back into the state somehow, at least a portion of it. That's my big thing.
But no question about it, man. I mean, all the money that the tribes have generated for gaming, I mean, from gaming in this state that has gone to the state has basically been, I don't want to say that it's been fraudulently mishandled, but it's been mishandled. It's been, the perception was at the time that was passed that it's all going to go into education, and it hasn't. It's not even close to that. So that's a physical responsibility issue with the state legislature, which, look, we all know about that. We're dealing with it now with the teachers and things. So, yes, I mean, I think, well, we've been down that road before, so hopefully they've learned their lesson with what they would do with this added money to come to the table. I think that, you know, the tribes are going to have the first right of refusal to do the gambling, and they're going to have to negotiate terms with the state. And if the state wants to get in business to do these things like that, they're going to have to negotiate it with the tribe. So we'll see how that all plays out in the next year and a half, something like that. Now, there are some tribes out there that could feel like at this point in time, if the Supreme Court is going to uphold gaming, that we may go out and try to do it against the state's wishes. And at that point, you'd have to see how the state reacts. Would they shut it down? Would they say we're not going to fight it in court? So there's a lot to it. There's a lot to be discussed.
I wonder too. You know, if the government, if state governments are going to get involved and they're going to want to push people that want to gamble to play, you know, through their casinos or through their books. And I asked Todd Furman this question. He said, absolutely. It would seem to me like then those state governments are going to do all that they can do to really try to shut down and eradicate, you know, your local bookie or you know, different ways that you can gamble, because that all of a sudden now becomes direct competition. So I think that aspect's interesting too, Mark.
It is, and I think that there's, I don't think that the local bookie is probably upset about this, about this legislation either, because I think that there's still going to be a market for that, for people that want to bet in that certain way. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But I, the fact that I think it's fun. I mean, you can have, if you want to have a fantasy sports element, or anybody wants to be able to lay a little bit of a money on a game on the way home from work, if you can stop by a tribal casino, or you can stop by a racetrack in the state and say, give me, you know, 50 on OU to beat Texas or vice versa, I think everybody's going to be better off for that. So it's a good day, man.
No,
good
I agree.
Day for that stuff.
And it is a long time overdue. I agree with what Stephen A. Smith had to say. I don't want to keep rehashing it, but I've taken trap metal from people on Twitter. Apparently, I make up fake sources and I make up stories now, Mark. It's what I'm in the business to do. But I just, what can I read? What would you say if Russell Westbrook is the most beloved Thunder player, Nick Collison's too, in the history of the franchise?
No. No. No, he's not. Is he?
I don't know. I'm asking.
I think no, he's not.
Thunder fans,
I think that's absurd.
Top five? I don't mean where he ranks as a player. I just mean in how the fan base, if he were to say something.
Here's how I would judge that.
They would take whatever Nick Collison says to the bank. If Nick Collison says it, it's got to be true, right?
Yes, I would judge how popular a player is by how many jerseys are going, how many jerseys fans are wearing going into the arena.
Okay,
like Collison's, now his credibility is different than popularity.
Can I just
think his credibility
read,
would be really high.
Can I just read this to you? I'm guessing a lot of people overlooked this when Nick Collison put out his farewell to Oklahoma City. Okay, I'm just gonna read this. This isn't me. I'm gonna read Nick Collison here. So what he said, I love playing with James in our second unit. It's still crazy to think we had all those guys playing in the NBA Finals under the age of 24. It is crazy. I wish I would have appreciated more at the time, because things would change fast. I still remember going to see James at his house the night he was traded. It was a gut punch. Now listen, listen with your ears. We just sat there together in shock. We couldn't believe it happened. We talked about how it went down, about negotiations and stuff, but we just couldn't believe it. Does that sound like when Nick Collison saying he went to James Harden's house and they sat down, and how emotional it was, how difficult it was for both of them to deal with what had just happened? Does that sound like James Harden was behind the scenes demanding trades, putting Sam Presti's feet to the fire? And this is Nick Collison, not me. So,
no, it's,
again, I guess he's a liar too. James a liar. I'm a liar. Nick Collison's a liar. I think the reality is the guy wanted to be here. He also wanted to get paid. And clearly for Sam Presti and Oklahoma City at the time, they weren't going to pay him the max and him stay here. So they dealt him. I mean, it's pretty simple to see. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's overly complicated. And that's what happened.
I will never know the ending of that story. I really don't know. Again, the Thunder say they wanted James Harden to play more with the ball in his hand, Russell to play off the ball, which I think would not have been necessarily the best for Russell. But maybe at that point in time, who knows, Russell would have become more of a diverse player, less of a hero ball player. You never, it's impossible to say. Again, I know this. Is that the one guy that's happiest about all this is James Harden, because it turned out the way that it did for him. And if he'd have stayed here, he may not be one of the best players in the NBA right now. It may have been who's a bigger boy between the two of those two guys, Russell and Harden. Who's going to take control of the team? Who's really going to run the team? There may have been a trade between one of those two superstars. There's all kinds of things. If you beat yourself up over the past, these articles today, I get the timeliness of it. I was giving you a little bit of grief over mentioning it today, but I understand why it's relevant now. But I'm just saying is that you just don't know. It's impossible to say what would have happened if they would have stayed together. It might not have been the best possible outcome for everyone, even Oklahoma City. All right, we have another hour of the Monsters of the Midday coming up. Stay tuned to the Sports Animal.
Game one matchup of the Western Conference Finals. Can they take down the Golden State Warriors? Mark Rogers with us today on AutoMax Monday. Marcus, what's going on at AutoMax?
Dusty, everyone knows they're your number one volume dealer of AutoMax Hyundais here at AutoMax Norman. 500 new Hyundais in stock, and they have the all-new Kona on the showroom floor here. 19,500, 40 of those available, 70 of the new Tucson at $19,999. They'll make you a deal, man. Pre-owned vehicles, they got a bunch as well. Dropped my car off inside the service department today for a little maintenance. So come see us at AutoMax Hyundai on an AutoMax Monday in Norman, a little east of I-35 between Robinson and Maine.
You excited about tonight's Western Conference Finals, or what has felt like all year the true NBA Finals here in this series?
I told you I get less excited. Like, I'm more excited the first round of the playoffs because there's so much basketball to consume. Now we only have one game a night.
I know.
And it's sad for me because this is it for basketball for a long time. But, yes, I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited. I want to know how excited the missile is. Like, is he going into some kind of a Jobu ritual for the game this evening, or is it just another night? You know,
looks like another night. He hadn't
just another night.
No. It's a big night. This is the first game I've really been pumped for in about since the beginning of the season, since like December, January.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, this is basically the NBA Finals.
So the missiles give a darn meter. It's registering now. Whereas typically he's just whatever.
Oh no, it is like up to a 10.
Not 2, not 3, not 4, not 5.
That's right, a 10.
Well, they better play defense, something the Cavs did not do last night. You might want to close out on some shooters. But Houston's got to play really good basketball, Mark. They're going to have to shoot the three ball better than they have these first couple of series. They haven't shot the three ball very well, which is also pretty impressive. Both five game series for Houston to this point, and they've yet to do it. Typically, got them to where they were in a 65-win team in the regular season, and that shoot the lights out from the perimeter. So that's first and foremost. If they shoot around 25% in the series, they're not going to beat Golden State.
I think Chris Paul has the key to this, though. They're going to have to defend extremely well.
Yep.
So defending the Warriors, I don't know what you do. It's clear what you do with LeBron, especially after watching the first two series. You're not like, oh, let's let LeBron get his and see what happens. No, that didn't work. How do you defend the Warriors? Who do you want taking shots on that team? What are bad shots? I mean, they're so good at getting good shots and so smart. How do you force them into taking bad shots? I don't know. That's the biggest challenge here. Like, I think the Rockets are going to have games in which they shoot really well because their offensive efficiency is outstanding, but they don't have as many good shooters as the Warriors. And the Warriors have constructed their team in such a way now at this point in the season, who cares about their lack of depth? It won't be relevant in this series unless one of their superstars gets into extreme foul trouble, or that happens four times in seven games. They'll be able to go extended minutes with those guys and should be in pretty good shape. I kind of feel like Clint Capella is the X factor. He is going to need to have some almost Shaq-like games if the Rockets are going to win this series.
Totally agree. He's definitely the X factor to me because really, I mean, Golden State, for as great as they're constructed, they don't have anybody really that can match up great with him. I mean, that should be a win. Now, the question is, can Clint Capella against that small lineup, what do they call it? The Hamptons Five? Is that their new name for it?
The lineup of death.
By the way, I've been wondering, the Hamptons That's Five, the is Thunder. That a shot at the Thunder? Like a direct shot?
I don't think it has less to do with the Thunder other than a pat on the back to the guys that were in the Hamptons.
That's pretty low. And Steve Kerr kind of brought that to the table first, didn't he? Didn't he mention that in a press conference?
Yeah.
But Clint Capella has to make them pay for that. But if they get out there and he's not able to be effective with that lineup on the floor and they've got to pull him off the floor, it's a huge advantage for Golden State. Clint Capella has got to be a difference maker, and he's got to be a problem for Golden State to deal with on both ends of the floor, both rebounding, protecting the rim, and then a bunch of the lobs and stuff at the basket that he gets from Paul and Harden.
Messel, you think he's the best? He's the key?
I would say so. I mean, that's Golden State. If there's one weakness you can point out. It's rebounding, and Capella is the one that is the best rebounder for the Rockets. And they're actually, when Capella's not on the floor, the Rockets aren't a really good rebounding team at all. So, I mean, it's pretty much Capella's the huge factor. I mean, besides the obvious ones in Harden, Paul, you know, Steph Curry and Thompson, all those guys, and Durant, Capella's going to be a huge factor. If he has a big series, the Rockets will win it. If he doesn't, they're going to lose.
But the Warriors are so difficult to try to defend in today's NBA because they can get so many good they get so many good shots that aren't at the rim.
Like
KD can get to the rim. They get shots in transition that are layups. Those are the shots they get around the rim. But they're such a good shooting team that they beat you with threes. And it's not, you know, again, Rockets are a good 3-point shooting team, but a lot of that comes off of guys getting set up for penetration off penetration. But the Warriors doesn't necessarily have to come off penetration. Some ball movement and some guys, they can just get their shot off at an incredibly rapid rate.
Yeah, like Curry. Now, I'll say this. The Warriors have shot 32% from the field, from 3-point land in the playoffs, but they were number one in the league in the regular season. So I'm going to guess they're going to shoot closer to their regular season.
What'd they shoot as
total?
A team? 37?
The Warriors?
Yeah.
They were closer. They were a little higher than that.
Higher than 37 as
a
team?
I think so. They were number one in the NBA. And they're only 32% this playoffs. So what that tells me is they've probably been getting a little unlucky shooting the three ball, and they'll probably have more success this series. So the Rockets have got to stop them from shooting the threes.
What do you think, Mark, matchups wise, what do you think? And I mean, I know there's gonna be, especially with Houston, they're gonna put so many people in the pick and roll, and I would expect Golden State's gonna switch a lot of stuff. It doesn't necessarily always matter who is guarding who, but what do they do with Steph Curry? Because I'm trying to figure out. I mean, I expect Klay Thompson to probably try to deal with James Harden. Would you put Andre Iguodala on Chris Paul? Would you put Steph Curry on Chris Paul? Can you hide Steph Curry in this matchup, Mark?
Well, I think Steph Curry matches up pretty well with Chris Paul. I mean, if you go back to some of the matchups that Chris Paul had against Steph when he was with the Clippers, he's gotten smoked every. I mean, he's had a poor history in that matchup. Now he's got. You got better, I think, resources around him at this time. But I think you can play. I think you can play Steph on Chris Paul. I mean, he's fast. You know what I'm saying? I mean, can they post up Curry with Paul? I don't know. I don't think so. But the wing defenders, like Oklahoma City, and you know, everybody talks about how important Andre Robertson is. Well, he's just one guy. You know, he's good at chasing people off the 3-point line when he's running at somebody because of his length. But the Warriors have locked down defenders everywhere.
This is true. This is very true. That's why not many people are giving the Houston Rockets a realistic opportunity to win. I know this. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to watch. It all unfolds tonight on TNT. And, hey, didn't TNT, they drew, they got the preferential seat at the table when they were picking, you know, which network gets which championship series. Because I would have to think, even though there's the draw of Brad Stevens and what this young team's doing, and obviously LeBron, I would have to think the Western Conference Finals is going to draw a much bigger audience in the East.
I would think so. Let's hope the series is competitive. Should be. I don't know why it wouldn't be. You know what I mean? I mean, but if it gets off to a, you know, 2-0 Warriors lead, like I think people thought that the Raptors was going to be the Sixers and that those Eastern Conference playoff series were going to be really fun to watch, you know, but they weren't.
It was not.
So there needs to be a little bit of intrigue to set it up, you know, going forward.
Hey, okay, I'm going to change gears. We're going to stay in the NBA. What do you think of Chris Haynes as a journalist? I've always thought of him as like the mouthpiece for the Warriors, Mark. ESPN.com, NBA writer. Really
been on the show. He's been on the show.
Chris been on the show. Okay.
Yeah, he has. I'm not. I don't know that I've ever thought. Yes, I would say yeah. That's probably as much of a takeaway as I've had.
I mean, he's always covering the Warriors, and typically, if you read his writing, it's slanted in a way from a Warriors point of view more times than not. But we got to credit Michael Doty for doing some great investigative journalism. He came across. He's on the Paul George watch for the Morning Animals, and we appreciate him being so diligent at his profession. But he came across some interesting little nuggets from Chris Haynes and how it relates to Paul George. Here's Chris Haynes talking about things he's hearing out on the street.
They don't want to hear this around these neck of the woods.
Oh, man.
I was talking with somebody, man. I was talking with somebody recently, and somebody recently close with Paul, they were telling me that Paul George were telling me that they wouldn't be surprised if he resigned in OKC.
In OKC. It was weird because it's like he didn't even want to say it. Like, he was like, you know what I mean? He's like, he had this information, and he's like, you know, he told him, I hate to do this to you guys. And even when it came out of his mouth, he's just like, you know, upset that he had to say it. Like, he doesn't want to wish any goodwill on Oklahoma City or something. But I thought that was interesting from a guy that, you know, is so West Coast oriented, for him to be here. And I don't put a whole lot of stock in it, but interesting that you hear kind of, we've heard so much about Paul, and it sounds like he's going to be off to somewhere else. Interesting that we hear that from Chris Haynes. That he's hearing that he's likely to re-sign in Oklahoma City.
It's the ultimate garbage in journalism. You know, I don't expect somebody to cite a source when it comes to these kind of things like that. But it's just as much faith as you put in this guy. So I don't know. Everybody's saying something. Everybody's heard it from a person. The overwhelming majority seems to be that Paul George wants to go to Los Angeles in the offseason.
Well, I hope it's. I mean, we all hope he stays here, but yeah, that's what it seems like.
With something stronger than that, though. Correct. I mean, if he's admitting it's third hand information. It's not. I heard this from Paul. Or...
Correct. But that's really all we've heard from anybody, though, right? I mean, there's been a couple of these different reports out there, but it's never been. What was it? It was Ryan Russillo initially, right? Ryan Russillo. Said basically gave third party information, kind of similar deal. He's on a podcast and he was asked questions.
Both you and I have got third party information. We could probably throw out there.
I don't.
Mark, sure, you could. It's stupid. It's
contrary
stupid, though,
to what I've been cast as in the last half hour on Twitter. I'm not one that likes to get into the fake news business.
I agree.
And I'm not one that likes to get out there on limbs and try to state something as a fact when it's just something that I.
It's not even close to the 1st of July. We have 6 more weeks, and I'm so off-put by the speculation. Now, I will have to admit that that's what people are listening to the show. They want to know that.
Hell yeah, they want to know.
They want that information. So I'm going to try to do my best, and we can talk about it, and that's why we should talk about this, is that's what people care about. But I'm tired of it, personally.
Well, don't be too tired, because I got one more clip. And this is, from a strategic standpoint, Chris Haynes offering up some information to Sam Presti in Oklahoma City.
With all that being said, he's been wanting to get back home forever. Hmm. He's going to have his opportunity. Magic Johnson, he'll give them the opportunity to talk with him and sit down. And who knows, once you get in that space.
Yeah.
And they start probably showing these video highlights of you and wearing wearing the purple and gold.
Mm-hmm.
I can see him being persuaded. But as of right now, this is what OKC wants to do. They want to lock him up before he even get to that point.
Yeah.
Because if it gets to a point of presentation with the Lakers and Magic Johnson, I'd be scared for any free agent visiting the Lakers.
I don't know. I'll say I do agree with them in that. And this, like, going back to the Kevin Durant thing, it was always intriguing to me that he wanted to meet with those other places. It's like, typically, if you start to take meetings, not that you can't listen to what everybody has to say and realize right where I'm at's the best place. I'm not saying that. But I do think that if Oklahoma City makes their pitch, right, and he's like, you know, it sounds great, but I just want to hear what these few other teams have to say. Probably what, 4 or 5 teams max, probably going to be in this conversation. You would have to be a little bit nervous with the cachet and the swag and the appeal to NBA players that obviously at Lakers brand and really Magic Johnson, what he could potentially be able to get done. Inside of a meeting. So you definitely, if you're Oklahoma City, you want to try to be able to lock him up before he sits down in that room. But if you're Paul George, you've been waiting to be a free agent for a long time. My guess is he's going to want to hear what everybody has to say.
Dusty, the last thing you ever want for somebody that you want to keep near you is to go negotiate with someone named Magic Johnson.
No, that's right.
You don't want that.
No, you don't.
You do not want someone talking that's important to you to someone named Magic Johnson. There's a lot of charm there with Magic, and I think a lot of appeal that and so much respect that players have for him that he would be able to, I think, sway Paul George. But no way is Paul George not going to listen to that. He's not going to sign a deal just in Oklahoma City. I mean, some of Chris Haynes' commentary is just really dumb there. Okay, yeah, we're going to try to lock you up before you talk to anybody else.
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't you?
No, yeah, I mean, that'd be the dumbest things he ever did. His agent would be the dumbest thing he ever did. The one thing his agent's, you know, who's going to make a commission off of Paul George's contract or is going to work with him, and, you know, I'm saying it's the easiest case made for Oklahoma City is the fifth year.
Money, money, money.
No way is Paul George going to make $46 million in a fifth year of a contract or the first year of a new contract. That's a lot of money, Dusty. That's a lot of money. The salary cap is shrinking in the NBA. It's not going up.
Does that mean at some point you're going to be on the books for paying Russell Westbrook and Paul George potentially in the neighborhood of $80+ million for 1 year?
Who even knows at the time? That may be frowned upon and looked at as some of the worst dealings in the NBA.
I know. What if these numbers, what if the TV numbers don't continue to go up and all these estimated, the estimated money is nowhere near 5 years from now what it is now? Some of these contracts could be looked at as just terrible.
I think most people feel like that the end of Russell's contract isn't going to be very good if he can't figure out how to play basketball smarter. Don't you think? I mean, because he's not going to overwhelm everyone with his athletic ability for the rest of his life.
Not for the rest of that deal, probably, no.
No, it's not. Not at the end of the deal. Paul George is younger. But
a little
still,
bit
I
younger.
Think 40, not a whole lot younger, but a little bit younger. But paying him $46 million at the end of that contract, I don't think it's going to be worth it. So it's not crazy. I don't sit here and go, if Paul George signs somewhere else, that the Thunder, it's a tragic day for Oklahoma City and it's just the end of the franchise and all those kind of things, because people aren't looking at and the capacity of the entire situation. If he goes, you're going to have some flexibility and some room to maneuver over the next couple of years, which you never know, man. It could work. I mean, there could be some things happen. Utah got Joe Ingles on this deal, that he was released from the Clippers because they had a little bit of room. You know, I mean, you want some flexibility there. If they have Paul George sign, I think that hopefully Oklahoma City can put pieces around two all-star players to become a title contender. But if they don't, I don't think you say, I'm not ever renewing my tickets or going to see the team again. It's not. It's simply not like that.
No, I sure hope not.
He's going to have to turn down that $46 million deal if he goes to L.A.
Yep.
That's a lot of money.
That 1 year, and there's no way. I mean, he can't. I guess he can paint himself a picture in his own head that, you know, at that point I'll still be at the top of my game and I'll still be have a great earning potential. But he has to know in his heart of hearts, I'll never be able to make that money up again. But
max money at that time may be $35 to $40 million.
You just don't know.
May not be. Maybe. I mean, I don't know.
And you don't even know what his earning potential will be at that point. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he may be not even near the player he once was. So, I mean, when you got an opportunity to go ahead, sign on the dotted line and guarantee yourself that money today, I mean, that will be a difficult thing for him to say no to. If indeed
the reason,
that's what he
before
does.
Before we wrap this up and get to Royce next, the reason that all of these one-on-one contracts seem so appealing at the time was because players knew their money was coming. Because of
now it's
escalating
here,
cap.
Now it's here.
It's not the same. It's
now it's here, and now no one knows if it's going to continue to stay up or if it may take a dip. I will say Jake Trotter has chimed in and said that the new gambling fees are going to prop up the cap. So he's already found a way. Hey. If TV money goes away or goes down, Jake Trotter, the Iron Man, has got a new
speculation.
Has got a new a source for some dollar bills to still be funneled in to the NBA. All right, we get back, we'll continue to talk about this as well as tonight's Western Conference Finals. Maybe get Royce's thoughts too a little bit on some of the comments from Nick Collison, the piece he put out last week regarding gut punches. As a matter of fact, Mark, Nick Collison even says in there was multiple gut punches, not just that one. So if he does a tell-all book, that could be very interesting. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it would be damning to Sam Presti or the Thunder, but when he cites multiple gut punches, I think that at least piques my interest to a degree. So we'll find out exactly what Royce Young knows about that and much, much more next on the Monsters of the Midday.
Then ultimately it'll come down to the states and how they want to try and create these various tax structures, because you have states like Nevada where it's about a 7% gaming tax, but Pennsylvania has proposed that they want to charge 34% tax rate on sports wagering, and what that ultimately means is that you couldn't offer a competitive product at the traditional minus 110 juice if the government wants to take too big a piece of the pie.
34%, that's a lot of vig. Todd Furman on earlier today, we'll have that up in podcast, it'll be right there with this guy's podcast, Mr. Royce Young of ESPN. Royce, how you doing today?
I am doing quite well. Big day in sports, huh?
What from the NBA side and people you've talked to, and I know Adam Silver, he's been kind of out in front of this thing for a while now, but how does the NBA feel about the Supreme Court ruling today of striking down federal law prohibiting sports gambling?
I mean, it's potentially massive. I mean, it is massive. You kind of take potentially out of it. I mean, this is one of those things, Dusty, that now, as you look at the landscape of the NBA, franchise values are going to go up even more than what they are. And I think that this is part of why you've seen, you look at Tillman Fertitta, you know, he just bought the Houston Rockets for what a lot of people thought was for a higher price tag than expected. And I think a lot of it is because a lot of these owners that were purchasing into the NBA had an expectation that gambling was going to be legalized, because that is going to raise franchise values, because there's going to be an influx of money coming into the system again. And the NBA, combined with the TV revenue that they have and everything else that's happening within sports, and the NBA is obviously one of the premier sports league at monetizing its product. And like you said, Adam Silver has been in the forefront of this, and the NBA is going to, I guarantee it, develop some sort of app or whatever it is connected to League Pass, connected to different things, so that you can be sitting there and you could be gambling within an NBA arena that you're sitting at. So franchises are going to go up in value. The salary cap is going to go up. It's going to change the game in a number of different ways.
Well, like Todd said, if you want to take a 34% cut, that's just one way to slow it, just stop it. I mean, there's no way that is feasible. That won't work. So I think the fantasy aspect of it's really interesting.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Can you you can go to a game right now and you can walk up on the upper section and you can go buy Oklahoma lottery ticket and do things like that. If you can walk into the arena and place a friendly $25 bet on whether or not Russell Westbrook's going to triple double that night,
right?
I mean, that has to be of huge value to the team, you know?
Yeah, and it's just going to bring, you know, I mean, look, I think that there's a stigma attached to gambling, obviously, to a lot of people, and that you're some kind of weird degenerate if you're willing to do that. But really what it is it fits into the whole narrative of what sports are. It's entertainment, right? And so part of buying a ticket is to entertain yourself. Part of maybe within that is to entertain yourself a little bit more, is to put some stakes on it personally. So, you know, I think that, you know, what it's going to also do is those people that are more casually involved in the NBA, the moment, you know, this is why the NFL is, you know, or I shouldn't say why, but it's one of the many reasons that the NFL generates so much money, is because it's the best betting league there is. Fantasy is biggest and gambling is the biggest. And if the NBA can get out in front of this specifically, then you can draw up interest in your game and you can increase television revenue. You can increase a lot of different things because you have people interested in whether or not Russell Westbrook gets a triple-double that night, because they are monetarily invested in that triple-double. So, and I think the other aspect of it is that it can be regulated, and it can be it can be something that a lot of people can know where their money is going and where their money is coming back from, which I think is important.
I've got a good question here from Ron Benton. He's also known as Spinozzi in the morning. He wants me to ask if you think this will affect players signing long-term deals, like 5-year contracts, because the revenue may go up and allow players to make more money.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I would say that the anticipation, I don't know how big of a cap spike it would be. I don't think it'll be anything in the same realm as what we saw in the summer of 2016 when it jumped, basically $20 million. I don't know if that it would affect it that much, but that's a good point. And, you know, I also wonder, though, at the same time, how league executives would approach that, Dusty, because, you know, there's a lot of executives that got kind of intoxicated by the summer of 2016 and the amount of money they had. And they started throwing Alan Crabb, you know, $45 million or whatever he got. They started throwing out Myers Leonard, big wads of money. So, Tyler Johnson got a huge contract. These guys shouldn't have gotten these level of deals, but the money was available. And that's what the market dictated. So I kind of wonder if it'll be like a two-way street type of deal, where players may say, you know, I want to sign short-term myself, because, you know, I assume the player that we're probably all thinking of here is Paul George.
Correct.
Maybe he says, I want to sign a 1+1 myself because I don't know where this salary cap is going to go.
I would be, real quickly on that, I would just say this, and like if you look at TV ratings, the NBA is on fire right now. ESPN is really thriving with the ratings this year from the NBA. It's done extremely well. But I've been in meetings, and I'm sure you have too, Royce, the future of television, how it's consumed,
right,
and how networks can monetize off that is very much in question right now. So, I mean, there's reason to believe that while you may get more, you know, you may get an added increase in revenues from a gambling stream at some point down the line, maybe not in the far away, but in the near future, you may see less money coming on TV just because that right now is a huge question that no one has the exact answer to.
Exactly, and that's something that everybody, not just ESPN,
no, all networks.
So many, yeah, I mean, all networks are trying to solve that. They're trying to crack that nut, and I think that, you know, you've seen it with, you know, the release of ESPN Plus and what they're trying to do there. They're trying to basically, you know, have a subscription service, and I don't know what the plan is for that whatsoever. But you know, we all know about the, you know, attempted purchase of, you know, the assets from 20th Century Fox.
Yep.
Basically, and what ESPN or Disney is trying to acquire there. And it wouldn't shock me, Dusty, if that's part of what the motivation is behind it, is that they want to acquire all these local sports channels that carry, you know, Texas Rangers baseball, Kansas City Royals baseball, Oklahoma City Thunder games, Dallas Mavericks games, all these local television stations, and they could funnel those within their app or whatever it might be, their streaming service, and so that you could package all this stuff together so that, you know, you've got that. You know, you could flip open your app and then it connects to the NBA gambling website or whatever it might be, then you could all have it kind of right there at your fingertips.
Yeah, that would be a federal issue, though, not a state's issue, I think. Anyway, it's complicated.
Over
hey,
my head.
Look, since we did broach the topic of LeBron better than MJ last week after the running left-hander, I think it's fair to say after game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, we should engage in this Red Auerbach debate with with Brad Stevens, who's been incredible so far, right? I mean, he's beat and one game through the series. I mean, he's cracked LeBron code.
Yeah, it's one game though. I mean, look, Brad Stevens is a tremendous basketball coach. That you won't find a bigger Brad Stevens lover than me, Mark. I absolutely adore the guy, but I do think there needs to be a little bit of a review on why we celebrate Brad Stevens. So,
okay,
like, in this postseason, he beat the Milwaukee Bucks, coached by Joe Prunty, okay? So, like, they took down the mighty Milwaukee Bucks. Way to go. And then they took down the Philadelphia 76ers, who, you know, clearly choked away a number of different games themselves. So, like, and they beat LeBron in game one. And that is not to take anything away from Brad Stevens. They've had two significant injuries. But I think the idea that Brad Stevens is out there coaching garbage is just completely overblown. Al Horford is maybe the defensive player of the year. He's an all-star. He's a fantastic player. He's got two top five picks in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. He's got another first-rounder in Terry Rozier. There's a number of different solid role players. Marcus Smart is an excellent role player. So, you know, this is not just some just trash heap that Brad Stevens is out there coaching. He is an awesome coach. I would put him in the top three in the NBA. He is fantastic. But I do think bowing down and claiming he's some sort of coaching deity is going a little bit too far.
I like it, Royce. Push back. I will just say this. If you remember, they made the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago, if memory serves, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
that's
with
right.
A completely different team, right? I mean, Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley were running that team. Those guys are nowhere to be found. So from the aspect of, and then you factor in the injuries. When you factor in how in flux this roster's been throughout the course of the season, especially when you compare it to last year's roster, I mean, the guy's done a heck of a job.
Oh, absolutely. He's done a wonderful job because he's a wonderful head coach.
You're just not ready to put him in the grand pantheon of all-time greats.
No, I mean, Brad Stevens has done a lot of great things since he's come into the NBA, and you can talk to anybody around the league and how much they revere and respect the guy. But it is one of those things where, I mean, I think that we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves when we want to, you know, go ahead and claim him to be. Look, I think if we've learned anything about the NBA playoffs, Dusty, is don't overreact to game one, especially
That's right.
Game one where the team won it on their home floor, because LeBron and the Cavs could easily win game two, and now it's 1-1, and now we have a different perspective on this. So Brad Stevens deserves a ton of credit. The guy, I would personally put him in the top three coaches in the NBA, maybe the top two along with Popovich. He is that awesome. But I don't know that I'm ready to crown him as God's gift to coaches.
Danny Ainge is pretty good at putting that roster together too.
Yeah, I think Danny Ainge deserves the most credit.
Got to give that dude some credit.
He's still not finished.
Greatest, no, he's not.
He made one of the greatest trades in NBA history, the deal with the Nets, to preserve the Celtics. And, yeah, the Celtics got some tough questions to ask themselves in the upcoming summer. But, yeah, I mean, look, they're about to add Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward back to a team that's got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Al Horford on it. I mean, the Celtics are set up for a 5 to 10 year run of being really, really good.
Hey, don't forget what they got from the Clippers for Doc Rivers, too. Remember? They got a first round pick for Doc Rivers. And what they do, they get rid of Doc Rivers and go get Brad Stevens.
Yeah.
And get cash and draft picks.
That was a nice move. You picked the Rockets to win this series, so this should be easy for you to finish this sentence. The Rockets beat Golden State if.
I don't know if that is easy for me to answer. I think they beat the Rockets beat the Warriors if James Harden's the best player in the series, which I know that's probably maybe oversimplifying things, but there's so many great players.
Oh, that's a challenge. I mean, that would be a feat if he did.
He's
got to
be awesome. He's got to be awesome in this series. And you know, he's going to be awesome in his own annoying, infuriating way of probably trying to draw fouls, get to the line 16 times a game or whatever it is. But if he can produce and keep the scoreboard moving and the Rockets can play solid defense, which they're capable of, I think the thing that I'm most interested in, Mark, is how do they combat the Hamptons 5 lineup? When the Warriors decide to go super small, will they keep Clint Capella out on the floor or will they play P.J. Tucker at center? Because I think that's going to be a tough question Mike D'Antoni's going to have to ask himself is because you want Capella on the floor because he's that awesome. He's an incredible rim protector. But at the same time, they have a lineup available to them, I think, where they could kind of match what the Warriors are going to do. So I think that's going to be one thing I'm going to be paying attention to.
I think Clint Capella has to be on the floor. But I don't have time today, but I do – when we get you back on Wednesday, I want you to try to explain to me what Nick Collison meant when he said this. I still remember going to see James at his house the night he was traded. It was a gut punch. We just sat there together in shock. We couldn't believe it happened. We talked about how it went down, about negotiations and stuff, but we just couldn't believe it. So I know we don't have time right now, but I need some answers to some of these questions that he's brought up. What happened, Royce? And I know you know, so we want the goods on Wednesday, okay?
All right, good tease. That's a good tease for Wednesday.
There you go, Royce Young of ESPN. Enjoy the game tonight. We will talk again tomorrow. Mark, I got a good text from the
I don't even think Royce believes that the Rockets are going to win the series.
No, he's just saying
it.
That.
He does not believe it.
Hey, Fat Jack said this. This is good info talking about the NBA. As it relates to all this gambling we're talking about, the NBA is going to have to do the most in terms of fantasy/prop betting because it is the tightest lines and the average player will have the least amount of success betting it long term.
I got an answer for that when we come back because I just sent a text to the Fat Jack. But yeah, that's we'll discuss on the other side.
For them to really reach their peak level, that was a blowout yesterday. So the Washington Capitals, they roll on. And they take a 2-0 series lead, win both games on the road to start that series in the NHL playoffs. So very, very impressive by the Washington Capitals. Marcus, it's an AutoMax Monday. What's going on there today?
We are at AutoMax Hyundai in Norman, your number one volume dealer with 500 new Hyundais in stock. Check out the all-new Kona here at 19.5 or the new Tucson at 19.9, over 70 of those. So stop in and see us. On an AutoMax Monday, just put it on the calendar. If you're looking for a new car, pre-owned, or one of the fine Hyundais, come visit us here at AutoMax Hyundai in Norman.
Okay, so you were saying you wanted to touch on something that Fat Jack had sent us. We were talking about, and I agree with you. Fantasy sports, I think that's an area that all these professional leagues, they've got to find a way to dip their toe into that water because it seems to be a growing industry.
Yeah, that's what they want. I mean, like, look, the house can lose. We talked about this last week that in Las Vegas, if the Las Vegas Knights win the hockey championship, the house is going to get crushed. And so in fantasy sports, the house doesn't lose. The house takes a percentage from the player's entry.
And
so in the NBA, I know how you are. I want to be in the same business where I never lose.
Yep.
I don't want to have the ability to lose. So the NBA, say, for example, in Oklahoma City, if you take 18,000 and change times 41 dates, that's 770,000 people that are captive audience if you have an on-site kiosk to make a fantasy wager when you walk inside the arena. That's what the NBA is interested in capitalizing on that money. And that's where the NBA is going to have a chance to negotiate their fee, their VIG, because the NBA isn't going to be able to negotiate a fee for what goes on in some kind of casino in the state of Oklahoma on whether or not they have deserve a piece of the action when it comes to just wagering on a game. So clearly this is, from the league's perspective, is way more about fantasy sports than it is about individual team wagering A versus B.
I totally agree. And I would say that, like, though I think it's good if you have the NBA, the NFL, you know, Major League Baseball, NHL, all those major sports on board with the sports gambling, how much they can really get involved may be a that may be a slippery slope, Mark, because the last thing you want is the leagues directly involved in the line setting of the gambling aspect.
And I don't know that they – I don't know how much they do want to be involved in that. I think they want to be more involved with fantasy element, because there's a lot less propensity to try to throw a game if you're a player. I mean, your individual performance is something that you would take great pride in. You're going to want to go out and achieve. And so there's no incentive as an individual to tank a game because there's very little outcome. And the dollars wagered right now, legally, illegally, whatever, on fantasy sports – far outkick dollars that are bet on teams. And so, yeah, that's the most lucrative part of this is the fantasy sports aspect. And how much can they get the public to become more interested in a fantasy sports bet? Would you, like, if, for example, would Lacey would be much more interested, I would think, maybe as a peripheral fan to bet $10 on Russell Westbrook having a triple double rather than the Thunder maybe laying 7.5, you know, one night instead of 9.5. It's a lot easier to have a tangible result there.
Probably so. I don't know. I don't know if my wife's ever made a bet, though she did teach me how to roll the dice. She turns into a different person on the dice table.
Well, she's got potential.
She goes on the dark side. You have to kind of stay away from her. Some of the eyeballs she was getting at the dice table weren't good. She's on the pass line, man.
The don't pass.
Don't pass. Yeah, she's on the don't pass.
She's rooting against the
correct
man with the
dice. She's
the
rooting
man
against
with the
everybody
dice
at the table. It's a bad place to be hanging out with her on a dice table, though.
I think somebody taught her well, though.
She's been profitable. Hey, you mentioned we like being in the business of where you don't lose situations. I've got somebody who's in a can't lose situation.
Who?
Kyler Murray. I'm sure
he had
people
a big weekend.
He had a huge weekend. Mark, he's having a big month of May. He had 2 3-run homers over the weekend as Oklahoma takes 2 of 3 down in Orlando from Central Florida. But his month of May is starting to really come into shape. He's hitting right now in the month of May 417, 3 homers, 12 runs batted in, and he scored 7 runs himself. So he is he's having quite the month. Now, we're just midway through, but as I believe I wrote down, June the 12th is what I found as the Major League Baseball draft. I think it's very – I still find it very interesting. If you ask me today, I still feel that he wants to play college football, and that's where he's going to wind up. He'll play at least a year for Oklahoma on the field. But, I mean, I'm not completely convicted in that, Mark. And I just – you know, so right now, Keith Law has him as the number 36 prospect. If he were to go just in that spot, in the number 36 spot, they've got it slotted now. That spot is slotted for a $1.97 million signing bonus. Obviously, if he goes higher, that number is going to go up. But, I mean, these numbers are starting to become very real, and the clock is ticking. We're inside of 30 days now, so this should be a very interesting story to see exactly how it unfolds. Again, I expect him to play football next year, but I don't see how anybody could be 100% completely convicted, especially, I mean, once these teams start calling and start throwing numbers around, what's it going to take to keep you off a football field? Maybe there's no number. I know Sooner fans, that's what they would like to hope, but I don't know. He keeps playing well, and he's playing well at the right time as the Major League Baseball draft gets closer and closer.
No matter what's been said between Kyler Murray and Lincoln Riley, I think that they need to be very concerned.
I mean, right? I mean, when you start talking millions of dollars, you kind of have to, right?
Yeah. Lincoln Riley needs to understand that Kyler Murray is about to go negotiate with a guy named Magic Johnson. Just saying.
The LA Dodgers may come a call, and that's what you're saying?
There's the amount of money and the persuasion that amount of, the amount of money that is going to be on the table and the things that are going to be said like this is going to be tough to turn down just because I want what's behind door number two, which is the certainty, uncertainty of being the quarterback at OU.
Yep.
That could go wrong too. I mean,
there's no question to me. If he's back, he'll be the starting quarterback at Oklahoma next year. I don't think that's the question, but it's, you know, everyone says, well, he can just go next year. He can, but you run a risk of playing football, of injury, of whatever it may be. Also, I was reading an article, you're a year older for next year's Major League Baseball draft. You know, the younger you are, the sexier prospect potentially you are. So now there's also the chance that he goes back, he has a great year in football, and he kills it even more so in baseball next year, and his stock is even higher. But, I mean, that's all kind of a roll of dice and a gamble, pocket tomorrow is a guarantee.
Well, one good thing for OU is that the team that picks him is going to want to sign him. And if he is absolutely dug in about playing quarterback at OU, then I think they're going to let him do it.
I can't imagine a team drafts him that high without him telling them that he's definitely just going to play baseball. I can't imagine a team's going to spend a first-round pick or something that high and then let him go play on a football field. I don't know. Hey, Miss was telling me I got to go. I think it's a great discussion. Again, like I said, though, if you're in the Kyler Murray camp, there's really a no-lose situation. You're either going to be starting quarterback at Oklahoma or you're going to be a millionaire playing Major League Baseball. Must be good to be as athletic and talented as Mr. Kyler Murray. Marcus, tell the Ultimate I said hello. I look forward to listening on my drive back. One more time, where you're at today.
AutoMax Hyundai of Norman, your number one volume dealer for an AutoMax Monday. Dusty, see you tomorrow.
See ya.